Thank you very much, Amy. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how we compared two indices. One of them we probably tried to do a little bit more direct in Pennsylvania, and a little bit more indirect in Arkansas, because we didn't have any water quality data that we could tie back to the field, as Brian alluded to earlier. And you've already seen those lack of trends, so I don't need to go into too much detail about that. But so we're just going to look at it from basically one is mandated in Arkansas and a voluntary adoption to a certain extent in Pennsylvania. And so this is the Arkansas Uche Spavinaw watershed. As you heard from Brian, spans Arkansas into Oklahoma. And when it crosses the state line, the water use designation basically changes to be a scenic, have a very high, low criteria for phosphorus. And there's an ongoing lawsuit, which has been ongoing since, as Brian mentioned, 2003. And I'll talk a little bit about that and why how the index came about. And Tommy Daniels here was a big part of that, developing that index assessment. And then also, secondly, we'll just touch on FD36, and Peter's still now got FD36 Junior, but it's still hanging in there. But we did some work there about trying to use the index at a larger scale of management and actually see if we did something that was based on the index decision, how that affected phosphorus in the stream. And so you've seen this. But these are the areas where the poultry houses are. It's a very intense. It's Arkansas, probably the second broiler producer behind Georgia, I think, in the country. This area is quite concentrated, as you can see, with poultry operations. The watershed, about just over 1,000 square kilometers. 50% of it is in forest. There's a very, very little row crop. There probably was years ago, but the soils are thin, fairly infertile, and most of it's in pasture. I think there probably was row crop earlier, but then because the row crop production declined, farmers tended to move to poultry production as a means of income, of staying on the farm. And that's one of the things that we've seen in many states, that the poultry or the animal industry to a certain extent has grown in areas because of a vacuum created by other ag concerns perhaps not doing as well. And so the poultry or the production of the manure and the bringing in of all those nutrients isn't directly tied to using them on the land. So this has brought this issue of sometimes those are not most fertile lands that need large amounts of nutrients, where there's two opposing things that are driving this. But anyway, it is a very synergistic system, because that manure, that litter, is a free source of nutrients, and because of that, the beef cattle production in that area is the second in the state, and so it's a cheap source. But you can see there's a huge amount of nitrogen and phosphorus being produced in the litter. But the litter applications, based on this lawsuit that Brian mentioned, by the Tulsa and the other municipalities there that were using the water that was coming out of Arkansas into Oklahoma for drinking water, then imposed this moratorium, but then it also then said you had to use a phosphorus index, or at that time a 590, but a phosphorus index, and in this case it was ESPE, which is the Spavinaw Phosphorus Index, because it was tailored to that watershed, depending on based on research that Tommy was doing with the soils, the runoff relationships, and the rainfall specific to that watershed. The litter applications in this case were based on the risk of phosphorus loss. Obviously, that's because it was based on the index. But really, the index Although we promote it as a tool, an educational tool, flexibility, implement BMPs, basically we have to understand that all the farmers are wanting to know is how much can I put on, and that's basically what the index is doing, and that's what's driving it for most of our producers. Just tell me how much I can put on, and that's fine with me. And that's what they really, that's what was what's driving this. It's to a certain extent how they got, how you get there, and whether there's a risk. It is important, but it's not that important to the farmer. They just want to know the rate of application. So, having said that, because there was a what we've seen in hindsight from other states where we've seen perhaps the index not seem to be making a change, the court did add some additional factors on there, and one of them was that there was a cutoff, and this probably cutoff is probably more restrictive than most states. It's at 300 milligrams of P, salt test P. Above that, you can't apply anything, whatever the risk. I think the index before that, probably you had to get up around 1,200 to 1,500 salt test P before that would in and of itself restrict application. So that was a pretty big, bold move, but it was done by a judge. It wasn't scientists. It was a judge that just said, this is what it's going to be, and I think everybody was a little concerned. Everybody thought that the industry would just fall apart. It didn't. It adapted. It worked within that, and an export enterprise is built up out of that. But that was one thing that was... they also looked at a 2-inch sample, 4-inch sample, sorry, it was done on that test. Prior to that, it was a 6-inch, and like several other states, they had to apply, had to measure water extractable P in the manure, because we did the research to show that that was driving, rather than total P, the losses. And so there has to be a value now. Again, that sometimes presents practicalities, and so in some cases we have a book value, but that book value tends to be more restrictive to encourage the measurement. But as this export business, as you'll see, has blossomed, those that are receiving this manure want to know what the litter contains, because they're buying a product, a fertilizer product, and so they want to know what's in it. And so now the growers, the poultry growers, it behooves them to get that analysis done, because it's something that's sold basically on its nutrient value. And as Brian said, one of the other stipulations that the court imposed was they saw a net surplus, so they said, well, a third of the litter that's produced in this watershed has to go out of the watershed. It doesn't have to go out of Arkansas, but it has to go out of this watershed, whether it be in Oklahoma or in Arkansas. It's got to go out. So those are some other restrictions. So what's achieved? What have they accomplished during this? There were the state of Oklahoma and the state of Arkansas hired 3 planners that would work with the farmers. Anybody that wanted to apply litter had to have a nutrient management plan. As I could mention, the litter application rate was based on the phosphorus index. And so what you can see is that the area planned, obviously not area, this is about 10% of the watershed. So this is a small area that we had nutrient management plans developed for. There were other areas that didn't, because those farmers basically probably had 20 hectares and 4 or 5 houses. They were never going to apply that litter, so they didn't have to have a plan. If they were exporting it off the farm, then that was that excluded them from it. There are some more now requirements to have plans on where it's going to ensure that where those farms that are receiving it. So there's a slight shifts in some responsibility of the producer of the litter to make sure that where it's going is not going to create an issue. But anyway, salt SP, I think there we've got 196 this last year. These are from about 900 plans that were written across the watershed. We don't have the information on where the farm, the name of the farms, but they share this database of the planning team. And from that, we can see on the plans that were written So the soil test P tends to be fairly consistent. It's on these farms, it's above the crop response, which would be about 30, what would be the recommended level. But the litter application rate, you can see here, 3.4, and it's now down to about 2.6, 1.3 pounds per acre, which is probably about a third of what historically was being applied. Normally, they were probably applying about 8 to 10 tons per 10 tons per hectare, depending on whether it was a cool or warm season. So after that moratorium that Brian mentioned, when the index went in, there was a dramatic reduction in amount of in average litter application rate. So in a way, that was a success rate. We haven't, as you saw earlier, been able to demonstrate a water quality, and that might be due to the fact that soil phosphorus or what's already been built up is driving the system to a greater extent than maybe the litter applications themselves. And the export is about, there's about over 80% now is being exported out of this watershed. They wanted to get 30, it's now 80, which I think partly is because sometimes litter application rates, when you're getting down to about 1.5 tons per acre, the level that it's at, you can't get much below that, realistically, for a farmer, either calibration-wise or economically, to apply rates much lower than that. But the success was that now, I guess, in our area, there is a market for this, these nutrients, and as we saw, I think, in this morning session, with fertilizer prices went up, there was an increased market. Farmers like litter. Farmers like it because of the organic matter. So there's been a creation of this market out there for this product, which has helped the system. And so these are the soil phosphorus levels that we can see that on average over the watershed. These are just the ranges if you break them out. There's about 10% below crop response. The majority of them are above. This is the court threshold. So we really are seeing a lot of them in the middle area. We don't see a large proportion that have exceeded 300. So that's a good situation. So moving on to FD36, we're trying to do a little bit more of a direct analysis. What we try to do here is run the index on this watershed and then, based on the risk, apply manure to that field and see if we can measure it in the stream. It was a fairly rough bucket chemistry type of approach. And these the red lines delineate segments in the watershed. Basically, when you survey it, there were discrete within there where we knew water was flowing. So basically, these are subcatchment areas, and we've got flumes where the green balls are that would collect water from those different segments. And so these areas were just roughly, these are where there were low risk. When we did a phosphorus index, those are low risk. Basically, the water was infiltrating in these soils. They were low P. These were a medium risk, dependent on certain factors, but there were these areas here were at high risk, either because there were steep slope close to the river, the stream, clay soils. There were a few clay soils which are higher runoff, and there were some higher P soils in there. So these were the high-risk areas. And so this area here, down here, this field, we said, okay, that's a high risk. And then this up here, we said that's a low risk. And so what we did, we put slurry on at a fairly high rate, 175 kilograms a piece. So we thought we'd really hit the system, see if we can measure it up there and then down here. And then monitored the flows at these different flumes. And so what we see, these are just the concentrations over time of total phosphorus at the two flumes, and this is the last one. Two was capturing basically water and flow runoff from that low-risk area, and so we really didn't see a lot. So we did see some, obviously, on the high-risk area, reach the stream at that flume at the downstream area. And calculating loads, now we could get flow coming from subsurface adding to this, but it just gives you a general idea that obviously this high-risk field was creating higher concentration in the stream, but application of those quite high rates at that time did not, we did not see a response at that segment. And if you look at the, as a terms of loads, about 3 to 16 kilograms of annual load coming off at those different flumes, and the percentage-wise of what was applied, 0.1% from that low risk, and up was about 0.7% from that high-risk field. So in summary, from Arkansas, we found that use of this index, again, we don't have, this is an indirect, but we feel it's a success in that application rates decreased threefold. We feel that's going to have, that in, with time, that will have a direct effect on runoff. There was over 80% now of the litter being transported out of the watershed rather than being applied, but the downside of that is those beef farmers are now hurting. There was a synergistic effect, so there is this indirect effect on them that to replace that nitrogen that's moved out is a significant cost when they're only probably getting about $5 to $10 per ton for that litter that they're selling. It's they are the ones that are hurting. It's not the poultry farmers, because they're just they're getting their income from the the birds. And in Pennsylvania, we see that the little P was applied when we applied it to low risk, which we hoped would happen. If we did it again, maybe that would change, but there was a much greater proportion coming from the high-risk field. And with that, I will close. Better close. Right. Thank you.